All right, Tabasa, good morning. We left off. Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Lamed Hey Amud Beis. All right, Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. It's actually eight lines up from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Shamati. Should remember again, yesterday's sugya was dealing all about the shofar. Like the shofar on Erev Shabbos that was sounded, that was to be a sign that Shabbos was coming. So he says the following over here. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Shamati, Shimba Lahadlik Acher Shesh Tikios Madlik. So Rabbi Yossi says, Nabosai, the way we left off in the Gemara is that usually after the last Tikia blast, remember, so we have Machlokis already as to how exactly one's supposed to sound these various sounds. In Bala, they're doing it one way, in Eretz, they're doing it a different way. Community, there seems to be some kind of difference. So Halacha L'Maisa, the one thing we saw in all of this is that there were different Minhagim, and the truth is the Gemara seemed to come to the conclusion that we're not all that concerned exactly how people are blowing the shofar, but as long as you're blowing it, and as long as the residents understand what it is that the Seder is, that's enough. That's enough. Now, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you should know, in Siman Reish Mem Ches, the following idea, that although we don't necessarily have the shofar today, what we do take from this Gemara is that communities are obligated to create some kind of system in which they can alert the residents as to the arrival of Shabbos. That is an important, that is a communal obligation. All right, so that's an Eretz Yisrael. You certainly have this. So Rabbi Yossi, Chayit Baruch Hanina, Shamati, Shimbad Lahalik Achar Sheish Tikios Madlik. So Rabbi Yossi says that I heard that there is time, even after the last of the shofar blasts, that there is time to go ahead and light candles afterwards. See, up until now, we've always assumed that after the last shofar blast, it's Shabbos. It's Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi says, this time, even after the last shofar blast, to light candles. Why? Where does he get this from? Sharnastu chachamim shir lechazen haknesses laholich shofro lebeiso. Because remember, Rabbi Yossi, here's what's interesting. The individual, we call him the chazen haknesses, right? So the shamis, after he blows the shofar, so he has to get home. And the assumption is that he's carrying his shofar home. So it can't be that Shabbos starts immediately after the last blast, because they have to at least give him a couple of minutes to get home and to go and put away his shofar. So the Gemara says, Shereschem Shir, the Chaznak is Lolok Shofar Lebeso. Amar Lo, they said to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Im Kein Nasata Divarecha L'Shiurin. If that's the case, what you've done is you've created a situation that's going to vary city to city. Look at Rashi. So Rashi says, "Laholich shofar lebeso, l'shahaya gag miyuchad begova ha'ir." Because remember, they didn't just blow the shofar from anywhere; they blew the shofar from the highest point in the city. There was a particular rooftop that was set aside for the shofar blowing. From there, he would take the shofar to his home. So therefore, by definition, there must be some time after the last blast to allow the chazan to get home and put away his shofar. The shiurin. So the Gemara says, here's the problem. Pamim shebesa karov, or pamim shebesa rachok. So how do you know where the shamus lives in relation to the rooftop on which he's blowing? So that can mean in city A, you have to give him 5 minutes to get home. Maybe in city B, you have to give him 20 minutes to get home. So it doesn't make sense. In general, when Chazal makes shiurim, we like to make one shiur, one size fits all with rabbinic shiurim. So the Gemara says, what are you going to do with this? Vary city to city. This city, it starts 5 minutes after the last blast. This city, it's 20 minutes after the last blast. What's the pshat? So the Gemara says the following. Elo, makom tsonua yeshlo lechazen hakneses berosh hagag, shesham maniach shofro. Therefore, they said to Rabbi Yossi, it's not true. The chazen hakneses did not take home the shofar. Instead, what was there? There was a good makom tsonua, means a good hidden place on the rooftop itself, that he would go ahead and he would put his shofar there. He would put this shofar there. Rash is Barosh Agag Shetak Hashem. In other words, the Chazan HaKnesses would not have to transport his shofar home, and therefore Halacha L'Maisa, Shabbos could indeed start when? Right after the last set of blasts. Lefi She'ein Metaltlin Lo'as HaShofar V'lo'as HaChatzotros. Why, says the Gemara? Because on Shabbos, you may not go ahead and carry a shofar, nor may you carry chatzotzros. Chatzotzros literally are trumpets. Now remember, those refer, if you remember, in the Mishkan and in the Beis Hamikdash, we had chatzotzos, which were just long straight horns. You can't carry either of these on Shabbos. Look at Rashi. She'ein metaltalin, afilu b'shus hayochin. That you're not really permitted to go ahead and carry it, even on Shabbos. So we'll say, what does that mean? This is not a din of hotzah. What is it a din? It's a din of muktzah. A din of muktzah. So the Gemara says, so therefore again, they would go ahead and they would have a place on the rooftop where the Chazan HaKnesses could deposit the shofar until after Shabbos, because both a shofar as well as chatzotzos are muktzah on Shabbos. So the Gemara says the following. V'hatanya, we have a braisa that says differently. Shofar metaltal, v'chatzotzos in the metaltalin. But we have another braisa that says what? That you can carry a shofar, but you may not carry chatzotzos, you may not carry trumpets. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yossi, lo kashya. So first of all, we'll say, before we go and look at Rashi, v'atayin a shofar metaltal. Second braisa says, you can carry a shofar. Why can you carry a shofar? Look at Rashi. L'fi shekofo frosho, because a shofar is bent, v'roi lishov b'mayim b'lishtos hatinok. Because, technically speaking, a shofar is usable as a receptacle, as a cup. What can you do with him? If you put your thumb over the mouth hole, you could draw water with it, and ultimately he says, give to a baby to drink. Give to a baby to drink. In other words, you could use it as a water receptacle. So therefore, because it's usable as a water receptacle, therefore by definition it's not muktzah. On the other hand, Rashi says chatzotzros pshuta. Chatzotzros, because they're straight, ve'ena ru'uya ela litkoa. So you can't really use the shofar, you can't really use the chatzotzros to go ahead and draw water, because it doesn't, because it's straight, it won't retain the water, and if you try to split out, the whole thing comes out. As opposed to the shofar, because of its curved nature, could retain the water. So chatzotzos are straight pshuta, the inner ruya el litkoa, and therefore they're not really usable for anything other than blowing. And therefore, again, it's an item that has a forbidden usage on Shabbos, and therefore it's mukta. So that's the second price. So the first price, Rabosai says, that you can't carry shofar, you can't carry chatzotzros. Second braisa says that you can carry shofar, can't carry chatzotzros. Am Rabbi Yossi lo kasha, it's not a question. Kan bi yochid, kan bi tzibur. One is talking about a yochid, one is talking about a tzibur. Amar li Abaye, one second. Ubi yochid lamai chazi. So what does that mean? What would an individual be using the shofar for? So the Gemara says, Hoil v'roi ligamea momayim. So Abaye says what Rashi just said before. Abaye said, because when you're talking about an individual shofar, so an individual could use his shofar to go ahead and draw water. The assumption is, you can't use the shofar of the rabbim for your own personal purposes, right? So my own shofar, I can go ahead and use to draw water. I can't take the shofar that belongs to the community, if it's talking about the Chazan HaKnesses, I can't use that shofar to go ahead and draw water, because that's not mine to use. Therefore, Abaye wants to suggest that the first price that says both the shofar and the chatzotzos are muktzah, that's a shofar of the rabbi, as opposed to the second price that says the shofar is not muktzah, that's my personal shofar, where I have the prerogative to use it even to draw water, and therefore it's called the kli that has a permitted use. So the Gemara says, one second, since you could go ahead and use it to draw water for a child, it's not mukta. So the Gemara says, one second, but tzibur nami chazi ligamea letinok ani. But if you have a shofar that belongs to the general public, to the tzibur, you could also use that to go ahead and draw water for a pauper's child, right? You're permitted to go ahead and use, I can't use communal items for my own personal use, but I'm permitted to use communal items for the purposes, for the needs of the poor. So you could use the same svara to say that, technically speaking, the shofar of the rabbin could be used to draw water for a poor person's child, in which case, again, now we've just demonstrated that it has a permitted use, and therefore halacha lemaisa, should not be mukta. V'su ha desanyo, so the Gemara says, furthermore, we have another braisa. And what does the third braisa say? The same way that we can carry a shofar, we can carry chatzotzros. So Rabbi said, the Gemara says, money, whose opinion does this reflect? So Rabbi said, in essence, we have three braisos. Braisa number one says, both shofar and chatzotzros are mukta. Braisa number two says, shofar is not mukta. Shofar can be carried. Chatzotzros are mukta. And braisa number three says that both the shofar and the chatzotzros can be carried, are not mukta. So what's the pshat? So the Gemara says, lo kash, it's not a contradiction. Harab Yehuda, Harab Shimon, Harab Nechemya. So what's the Gemara says, three different opinions. Now take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Harab Yehuda, shofar metaltal, the chatzotzros einan metaltalin, demuktzahu. Aval shofar Torah's kli alav kidamran leil. So Rabbi said Rabbi Yehuda is the one who has a more liberal view of mukta, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, as long as a kli is technically usable, has a usable purpose, then halach lemais Rabbi Yehuda says it's not mukta. So therefore, the price that says that the shofar can be moved, but the chatzos ros cannot. That's Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Since the shofar has a permitted use on Shabbos, i.e., drawing the water for a child, then halach lemais on. It's not mukta. Ha, let's look at the next Rashi. Diktani tarvay metal tolin, Rabbi Shimoni de lesley mukta. Now, the next brisa, which is really the third brisa in the order of things, that says that both objects can be carried, that reflects the view of Rabbi Nechemya, of Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold the mukta. Now, what does that mean, doesn't? Nobody doesn't hold the mukta. But what it means is that Rabbi Shimon takes the most relaxed view of mukta, and Rabbi Shimon will literally say that as long as the kli is usable for anything, then halach lemais, that's not mukta. So, for example, what's a chatzotz rots usable for? I don't know. A doorstop, a paperweight, right? You could use it for something. So, according to that, Rabbi Shimon would hold as long as it has some type of permitted use on Shabbos, it's not going to be mukta. And then the next price, a ha, that third Rashi, ha, diktani av shofar im metaltolin, and the opinion that said that even a shofar can't be carried. That was Brisa number two. That was Brisa number one. So how diktani af shofar ein metaltolin, Rabbi Nechemya, the amra afilu tarvad afilu talis ein nitlin ela letzorech tashmisho hameyuchad veikar shofar lav legmo amayim. Rabbi Nechemya holds that the only time you're permitted to use a kli on Shabbos is when you're using it for its primary purpose. Only time it's not mukta is if its primary purpose is permitted on Shabbos. Bless you. But a shofar, of course, its primary purpose is not to draw water, and therefore Nechemya would be of the opinion that halach lemaisa, even the shofar would be mukta on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, umay shofar nami. So what is the meaning of the brisa when it says, and a shofar too? Chatzotzros. In this particular situation, shofar actually means trumpets. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Umay shofar, diktani bahi de Rabbi Nechemya, dakdomis be the chatzotzros de isura. Right? What is this? Now, he's talking specifically in the brace of Rabbi Nechemya. Now, remember, Rabbi Nechemya was the one whose opinion we just demonstrated holds. It's Rabbi Nechemya holds that in general, Rabbi Nechemya is the author of the brace that says that even a shofar is mukta. Can't even move a shofar. Why? Because according to Rabbi Nechemya, you can only move a kli when you're using it for its particularly defined purpose. So Rashi says, Umay shofar, diktani bahid Rabbi Nechemya, da'akdomis be lechatzotzros le'isura. So, remember, he's referring to over here, right? So the Brisa said you're not permitted to move the shofar or the chatzotzros. Dak domis be the chatzotzros leisura, v'cheivan detani im metalton as ha-shofar, su lo tzorach lemisnei chatzotzros, d'chol shekein hi. Hoil ve'in aroi legamei avotinok el ha-shofar detamarisha, hu chatzotzros. So also listen to this. What the Gemara is asking is like this. On Rabbi Nechemya's Brisa. So if you accept Rabbi Nechemya's Brisa, which is the first of the three Brisos, that says, l'fi she'im metalton lo as ha-shofar lo chatzotzros. So the Gemara asks a very simple question. If you already told me that you can't carry a shofar, it goes without saying what? That you can't carry chatzotzros. Because the havamina is, if anything, a shofar is going to be more kal, going to be more lenient. Why? Because technically speaking, you can pull out a permitted purpose from the shofar, or a permitted usage. The chatzotzros has no such thing. So therefore, the Gemara is asking Rabbi Nechemya's Brisa, if you're already telling me you can't use a shofar, you don't even have to tell me, I'm sorry, not use. If you're already telling me that you can't carry the shofar, it goes without saying that you can't carry the chatzotzros. So just finish that Rashi. El shofar de tanareisha hu chatzotzros, the chatzotzros de tanav seifa hu shofar, v'yishtanu shamayi kidrav chista. So now the Gemara is going to say something fascinating. The Gemara is going to say that in reality, in that first brisa of Rabbi Nechemya, that when the brisa says shofar, it actually means chatzotzros, and when the brisa says chatzotzros, it actually means shofar. What does that mean? So look at Rashi. Umay shofar nami chatzotzros, kidrav chista. But say, listen to this. Kidrav chista. The Amrav chista, hani tlas mili ishtani shamayhu michichara beis hamikdash. These three words changed when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. I'm also, you have to appreciate what's happening here. The Maral Chidush HaGodes says that the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was so traumatic that it even affected the way we speak. right? That the you know, sometimes when a chesron person encounters incredible loss, so often they're at a loss for words, right? Tragedy often corrupts one's koach hadibur. A person can't even articulate what it is exactly that they're thinking. So when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was so traumatic for Klal Yisrael that literally language changed. Language, not purposely, language just changed. So the Gemara says, Mechi char Beis HaMikdash, chatzot chatzot rasa, shufra, shufra, chatzot rasa. So when the Beis HaMikdash changed, was destroyed, one of the words that people changed around, again, Rabbi said, this was not intentionally. This was just ultimately what happened in people's manner of speech. So the word chatzot, which normally meant trumpet, people used for shofar, and shofar became chatzotzros. So, okay, the reason why this is important for us is because these are the words that Rabbi Nechemiah is using in his Braisa. So Rabbi Nechemiah says, "Ein metalt lefish ein metaltlin lo asa shofar lo asa chatzotzros." Rabbi Nechemiah really means that to say what? You may not carry chatzotzros, trumpets, nor may you carry the shofar. Okay, lemay nafkamina. Now the truth is, who cares? Who cares? What does it matter for us? So the Gemara says it matters. Lof shofar shal Rosh Hashanah. Because in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we have to be careful. Because when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, we blow the shofar, we have to remember that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah is not what people colloquially call a shofar. People are colloquially calling a shofar a trumpet. But we have to remember that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah is not a trumpet, but in fact is what people colloquially call chatzotzros. Okay. Arava tziftzifa. Arava tziftzifa. Okay, we don't have to do it. Fine, you look at the Rashi. Alright, Arava Tziftzifa, Tziftzifa Arava. So that which was called an Arava is now called a Tziftzifa, and that which was called a Tziftzifa is now called an Arava. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Tziftzifa, Psula Lulav. So Tziftzifa is a plant that, or a tree, that looks, branches that look like an Arava, look like a willow branch. The Ala Shala Agul, the Kana Shala Lavan. Its leaves are rounded, right? Its leaves are rounded, as opposed to, let's say, the leaves of an arava, which come to a point and are somewhat serrated at the edges. The leaves of the tziftzifa are rounded, and furthermore, its stalk is white, as opposed to the stalk of a real arava, which has a reddish hue. So tziftzifa, arava tziftzifa, people started calling it arava tziftzifa, and tziftzifa arava, lemay nafkamina, what does it matter? Lululav. It matters lulav, Rav Osa, because remember, when it comes to lulav, you have to use an arava. You have to be careful, because what people are calling an arava is in fact a tziftzifa, which is not permitted for use in a lulav.
How did we answer the question?
Because it turns out that Reb Nechemiah says shofar, he really means chatzotros, and when he says chatzotros, he really means shofar. So the way to read his braisa is.
He just needed to say chatzotros.
I'm sorry.
So then, if he had just said chatzotros, I would have known, said shofar, I would have known. Whichever
is more common. Yeah, correct. That is still true. But now what the Gemara is saying, at least, but now the wording of the Braisa doesn't bother us. Because now the wording of the Braisa actually makes sense. You can't use chatzotros. You can't use chatzotros. And you also can't use shofar. The Gemara is not asking, why didn't it just say chatzotros? The Gemara is only asking that question when we think that shofar is first. But now that we know that chatzotros is first, the fact that he added in additional information doesn't bother us anymore. It only bothered us when we thought the first thing he said was shofar. Because then if the first thing you're saying is shofar, it's obvious that you can't use chatzotros. Now that the first thing that he's saying is chatzotros, okay, he wanted to also now he puts in there shofar, because shofar I wouldn't have known from chatzotros. Right? It's like you can't use chatzotros, okay. I said it has no permitted use. But now he also says you also can't use shofar because it has a permitted use. Correct, but both of them. All right. So the Gemara goes weiter. Psura, psurta. Another word that got mixed up was psura, psurta, psurta, psura. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Psura, mitchila hayu korin legdola psura, uliktana psurta, va'akshav nishtanu. So it's talking about tables. Tables. In the beginning, they used to call a large table a psura, and a small table a psurta. Now the names got mixed up. L'nai nafkamina, what does it matter? L'nekachumemkar, it matters for business. Because if you put in an order, if you put in an order for a psora, even though technically speaking, originally that used to mean a large table, just understand the way that people refer to it now is, the way that people refer to it now is as a small table. Is that a small table? Excuse me. Correct. Psora used to mean a large table. Now people call it a small table. So for business purposes, we go with the definition that people use now. Bosa is a very important din in Choshen Mishpat, in general business law. That business law is governed by the way that people speak, at least in Halacha, by the way that people use particular terminologies, even if those terminologies have different definitions. Okay? L'mayna, l'mekamekar. Amar Abaye, af anu ne'amar hov lila bekasi, bekasi hov lila. So Abayis, I'm going to give you another example. Another example is that which was called the Hovlila is now called the Bekasi. That which was called the Bekasi is now called the Hovlila. We'll say this refers to the different stomachs of an animal, of a behemagasa, of a large animal. So one of the stomachs is called the Hovlila, but now it's called the Bekasi. The one that was called the Bekasi is now called the Hovlila. L'may nafkamina, what does it matter? L'machat shenimtseis ba'ove beis hakosos. It matters if you find a needle in a stomach called the beis hakosos. The mitzad echad kshera, or mishnei tzadim trefa. That if the needle is only in one side of the stomach, the animal is kosher. But if the needle goes through two sides of the stomach, then the animal is a trefa. So Rabbi said that only refers to the stomach of the beis hakosos. Rashi points out over here, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, beis kosos, sof hakeres, this is the last stomach. V'yesh ba'ove shekorin dovlon, v'tocho osu ikumin kosos. So the point the Gemara is making over here is, just be aware that the names of these stomachs have gotten mixed up, but you have to keep track of which one is which, because it has ramifications, v'ilchos trefus. Amar Ravashi, af anu ne'emar. Ravashi gives another one, bavel bursif, bursif bavel, that bavel, right, that we call Bavel Bursif, and Bursif Bavel, even the names of places, has been mixed up. L'nai nafkamina, what does it matter? L'gite noshim. It matters for divorce documents. Okay, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. L'gite noshim. So it says Rashi, d'kaim alon b'nei Bavel b'kiin, shetzarech lichtov get l'shma. That we learned in the Masechet Gittin that the people of Bavel were Bekiyan, were very well versed in the laws of Gittin, the chapter on get lishma, right? You can't purchase a pro forma get, right? So halacha says a get must be written for the sake of a particular man, for the sake of a particular woman. Now, not every place, not every locale knew this. So certain Gittin, therefore, were sometimes subject to increased scrutiny. But the Gemara says Gittin that come from Bavel, and Bavel they know what they're doing. V'hamevi get misham. And therefore, Aloch Lamaisa, if one brings a get from Bavel, one need not ascertain about the kashrus, one need not validate the kashrus of the get, because the gittin that come from Bavel stand on their own. But the people of other lands are not well versed in the laws of Lishma. V'tzarech achshav b'nei bursif hi Bavel. So therefore, Bosa, you have to be very careful. So if Bavel is now known as Borsif. So now, if you say, but Borsif became known as Bavel. Borsif, why did it get the name Borsif? Not in a very nice way. It comes from the name Bor. Right, Bor, Rashi points out, it's almost like Bor She'in LaSof, right? It's like a pit with no end. It's a pit with no end. So the people are not the people are exceptionally ignorant. So therefore you have to be careful, says the Gemara, because if a get comes from Bavel, today Bavel doesn't mean Bavel. Today Bavel means Borsif. Such a get has to be subject to enhanced scrutiny, because most probably the people who did it didn't know what they were doing. As opposed to a get that comes from Borsif, which is today known as, which is how we call Bavel today, such a get is able to stand on its own. Okay? Hadron Aloch, Bameman Ligin. Kira.
These all changed by the Chorba?
Yeah, all of these were changed by the Chorba. Correct. Kira Shesikua Bekashu Begalva. So I'm going to say now we get into the Perek Akira, which deals extensively with the laws of Bishul. We already touched on some of these subjects a little bit earlier. So the Gemara says, Kira Shisikua Bekashu Begalva. If you have a stove, the Rashi says, Kira Ha'asuya Ke'in Kedera V'nosnin Kedera L'socha. So I'll say, the way the Kira that they're often referring to is, it's not, we're going to call it like a stove, but it was a little bit different than our stoves, and that the way it used to look is, it had like It was a box shaped structure. Truth is, technically speaking, you could put items into it, but what you could also, which was the more normative use of it, is it had a cutout on top. The cutout essentially was just a little less wide than the actual size of the pot. So the pot wouldn't really rest on top. What ended up happening is the pot would be partially submersed within the kira itself. So whatever amount of the pot, half of the pot would be in the kira. Okay? So a kira shesikah v'kasha v'gavava. If you have a kira, this type of stove, but we'll call it a stove for our purposes. I'm sorry? No, it's not like an oven, because an oven is something you put something fully into, right? And it's closed. That's an oven, right? A stove is something that you cook on top of. No, not necessarily. The pot would be partially inside of it, right? If you could imagine, half of the pot would go into it, but half of the pot would be sticking out of it. So the Gemara says, Kira shesikah v'kasha v'gavava. So if you have a stove that was fired up, that was heated with kasha v'gavava, so Rashi says, kash is navos hashibalun, Gavava is hanigvav min asada. So kosh is the top of the grain that's not really consumed, the psoles, and the gavava is the stubble that gets left in the ground right after you harvest the grain. So these items were used for fuel. So if you go ahead and you fuel an oven with these items, nosin alea tafshil, then you are permitted to go ahead and put a pot of food on top of this stove. Okay, we're going to explain all of what this means. Begeves ubeitzim, however, if you fuel the stove, with Gefes and Eitzim. Gefes, Rashi points out, is Psoles Shel Shumshumin Shotzi Shmanon. So Gefes is the pulp. Now Rashi says it's the pulp of sesame seeds from which you've extracted the oil. The truth is, it doesn't just have to be sesame seeds. It could really be pulp in general of any item from which you extract. It could be pulp of olives, we'll see. But right, a pulp. And Eitzim, of course, is wood. So lo yitain, you may not leave food on it on Shabbos, ad sheyigrov, until you remove the hizors, o ad sheyitain es ha'efer, or unless you blanket the hizors with a covering of ash or dirt. Okay, so look at Rashi, ad sheyigrov, ha'gacholim mishum demosif hevel, v'tayma parishna beverek tila'el shem yechata begicholim, oh, actually, eating afer. I'll gabi yecham b'chsosim l'tzanim. So let me just say this outside now. The major kash and gavava. What happens if you fuel your stove with kash, with this top of kash literally means straw. But what it's really referring to is the top of the wheat stalks that are not consumed. The gavava is the stubble that's left in the ground. The chap with these items is that as soon as you burn them, they incinerate, right? Meaning they're there's a word for it. They're gone. that was the technical term I was looking for, yes. They're gone. Okay, good. They're gone, meaning they burn up. They're consumed, right? As opposed to Gefes and Eitzim, where the actual physical item that's burning remains in existence for much longer. The concern that Chazal had, now remember what we're going to see that we're talking about over here, is maintaining food on a fire Erev Shabbos going into Friday night. And the concern that Chazal are going to have is what we call Shem Yechata. We spoke about this earlier. That one may come to stoke the heat source in order to go ahead and either hasten or amplify the cooking process. Doing that has two ramifications. Stoking the heat source could A, be an issue of Havara, could be an issue of kindling. Plus, we'll see if your food is not fully cooked, can also be an issue of Bishul, of cooking. So therefore, what Chazal are saying over here is that Halacha L'maisa, if you're heating your stove with the heat source, that's essentially going to burn out very quickly. We're not really concerned you're going to do anything with it on Shabbos because there's nothing left to do anything with it on Shabbos. But if you're using a heat source that endures, then we are concerned that you may come to stoke the coals, and therefore the only way we will let you use it on Shabbos is how? Either if before Shabbos you actually remove the heat source, right? You remove the gefes or the eitzim, you remove it. Now obviously once you remove it, the chap with the kira was that a kira retained its heat even after you remove the heat source. So if you're just going to use the stove as a heating mechanism, so you're going to remove it, that's fine. Then we're not worried because obviously there's nothing to stoke. Or you blanket it with ash. If you blanket it with ash, what that essentially does is it lessens the heating or cooking ability of the heat source, in which case then we're not concerned that you may come to go ahead and stoke it. I'm giving you coming attractions. We're going to see all this in the Gemara, just so it sits well with you now. So the Gemara goes weiter. Beishamai says, Chamin avalo tafshil. Beis Shammai only allows, now we'll discuss exactly what we're talking about over here, but Beis Shammai holds that even if, look at Rashi, according to Rashi, Beis Shammai says that even if you went ahead and either removed the heat source or you blanketed the coals, right? You blanketed the heat source with ash, still Beis Shammai says the only thing you can maintain on your stovetop going into Shabbos is what? Water. Water. You could heat water. That's the only thing Beis Shammai allows you to do. Beis Shammai omrim chamin aval lo tavshil. You can only heat up water, but not food. And Rashi points out that the reason he allows that is because water, essentially the assumption is really going to be boiled before Shabbos, and therefore the only thing you're looking to do is preserve its heat. Because of that, then there's no real fear you're going to come to stoke the coal. But Beis Shammai does not allow you to maintain food on the stove going into Shabbos, because Beis Shammai holds that wherever there's food, there's a Yetzirah to go ahead and stoke the coal in order to go ahead and heat up the food. Ubeisilo omrim chamenu tavshil. Beis Hillel says, no, you are permitted to go ahead and maintain both water as well as food on a stove that has either had its heat source removed or had the heat source covered. Beis Shammai says, notlin avalo machzirin. Beis Shammai says, furthermore, now on Shabbos itself, you could take things off the stovetop, but you may not return them. Ubeis Hillel omrim af machzirin. And Beis Hillel holds that what? That you can even go ahead and return things to the stovetop. Fine. Let's see weiter. Correct. Now we're going to see something in the Gemara right now. What does that matter? So it burns slower. I don't know. Maybe the Gemara will adjust that. I don't know. I hear. So the Gemara is like this. Iboiluhu. Hai lo yitein, lo yachzirhu, avalishos mashin, afapi she'eno garofakal. So now the Gemara asks this. So the question is, we have to define what is the Mishnah talking about. Hai lo yitein, when the Gemara says lo yitein, that you, right, so here's what we know the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said that you may not go ahead and place an item on the stovetop. Again, we're leaving aside now kashin gavar out of the question. Assuming you are heating your stove with one of the heat sources that does not immediately incinerate, that sticks around for a while. So the Mishnah said that you may not place food on the stovetop, ad shi yigrof or ad shi tinas ha'efer. You either have to remove the heat source or you have to blanket it with dirt. You have to blanket it with dust. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Does it mean lo yachzir? Is it referring to chazara? Is it referring to returning things to the stovetop on Shabbos? Avalishos mashin. But maybe what it means is that maintaining food from Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, you're permitted to do what? Even if you don't remove the coals, even if you don't remove the heat source or cover the heat source. Umani, and whose opinion would this reflect? Chananya. What does Chananya say? Disanya. Chananya Omer. Kol shu kemaychol ben drusoi, mutra la shoso agabe kira, afa pisha eno garo ve eno katum. So I will say, Chananya is of the opinion, we saw this earlier, that as long as food is cooked, kemaychol ben drusoi. So remember, we spoke about ben drusoi before. So ben drusoi was a robber. Right? So I guess there are many benefits to living life on the run. One of them is you don't really have time to eat meal like a mensch. So ben drusoi would eat his food one third cooked. So Chazal used this as a shear to say that once a food has cooked for one third, now remember, it means one third of its cooking time. Once a food has been cooked for one third, once food is one third cooked, that's already reached the threshold of halachic edibility. One third of its cooking time, correct. Once it's reached one third of its cooking time, then that's reached the halachic threshold of edibility. Now what does it mean? So Chananya therefore says, once the food is one third cooked, Chananya says, you're permitted to put that on the stove on Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos, and you could maintain it on a stove even if the stove is not what? Even if the heat source is not removed or not blanketed. Or in other words, what Chananya is saying is, once food has reached the threshold of Michael ben Drusai, we are not worried that you will come to manipulate the heat source to hasten the cooking process, since already it's reached that threshold of edibility. So the Gemara says, on one hand you could say, maybe what the Mishnah is teaching us is like this. When it comes to maintaining food from Erev Shabbos into Shabbos, as long as the food is one-third cooked, then what? We don't care about the heat source. You can do whatever you want with the heat source because we're not afraid you're going to stoke it. So what is the Mishnah talking about? The Mishnah is talking about Chazara. The Mishnah is talking about the qualifications for returning food to a stovetop on Shabbos. Now, let's say Friday night, you want to put your food back on the stovetop. So then the Mishnah says, you may not do so unless what? Unless the heat source has either been removed or the heat source has a layer of ash on top of it. It's been tempered in some way. That's one possibility. O Dilma, or perhaps the Mishnah is talking about, Lishos Tanan. That's what we call Chazara. Chazara means returning food to the stovetop on Shabbos. Or potentially, the Mishnah is not talking about Chazara, the Mishnah is talking about what we call Shihia. Shihia means what? Shihia means maintaining food on a flame going into Shabbos. O Dilma Lishos Tanan. And what is the Mishnah teaching us? V'igaraf ha-katim in, ilo, lo, v'choshikin lahachzir. Or maybe the topic of the Mishnah Bosa is not Chazara, but it's what we call Shehiyah. Shehiyah means the halachos of Shabbos, of maintaining, of putting food on a fire, Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos. And maybe what the Mishnah is teaching us is like this. The only way you are permitted to go ahead and maintain food on a stovetop, Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos is how? Is if the stove is Garof or Katum. Only if the stove either has its heat source removed or its heat source layered with ash or with dirt, that's the only way you're permitted to go ahead and maintain food Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos. Because if you don't have one of those two things, then we're concerned with what? Shemi Echata. We're concerned you may come to stoke the kosher. Rabbi said, these are the two ways of understanding the Mishnah. Either it's talking about Chazara, and the Mishnah reflects the view of Hananya. Hananya holds it, as long as the food is Kemaychol Ben Jerusai, you don't have to worry about what the heat source looks like on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, because we're not considering going to stoke the coals, because the food has already reached the basic halachic threshold of edibility. And therefore, the Mishnah says that the oven must be garuf or katum. I'm not going to keep defining this. I'll define it once more. Garuf means the coals are cleaned out. Katum means that it's covered with ash. Those are the qualifications for chazara, that if you want to return food on Shabbos to the fire, to the stovetop, you need the stove to be either garuf or katum. That's one possibility. Or second possibility is that no, the Mishnah's primary subject is shehiyah. The Mishnah is talking about what are the qualifications that a stovetop must conform to in order to allow food to be maintained on an Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos. And the Mishnah says it has to be garuf or katum. Of course, all the more so for chazara as well. So which one is it? This is the shayla. Shaila. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Tashma, midiktani trei bavi b'mas nisin. From the fact that the Mishnah teaches two different cases in the Mishnah, Beishamai omrim, chamin, avalo tavshil, ubeisilal omrim, chamin utavshil. So remember, what did the second part of the Braisa say? Second part of the Braisa quoted in Machlogis Beishamai Beisilal. So Beishamai says that you're permitted to go ahead and use the stove with water, but you're not permitted to do it with tavshil. Beisilal says chamin utavshil. Next, Beishamai omrim notlin avalo machzirin. Ubeisilal omrim af machzirin. So Beishamai says that you can take it off, but you can't return it. And Beisilal says you can even return it. So the Gemara says, all right. If you see that the Mishnah is talking about Shehiyah, maintaining food on a fire, going into Shabbos, then Hachi Katani, then this is what the Mishnah means to say. If you have a stove that was heated with straw, with stubble, Mashin Aleha, then you could certainly maintain food going on top of it, going into Shabbos, because there's no fear that the heat, that you may come to manipulate the heat source. Why? Because the heat source will be gone very quickly. However, begefes ube'etzim, now again, the Gemara is just restating how to read the Mishnah now, but if you fueled the stove with gefes ube'etzim, with pulp or with wood, lo yishe, you may not go ahead and maintain food on that stovetop going into Shabbos, shehiyah, ad sheyigrof or ad sheyitin esayifer, until you go ahead and what? Either clean out the coals or blanket it with dirt. So then, according to this reading of the Mishnah, umbahein mashin, and what types of items can you maintain on a stovetop, Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos? Beis Shammai omrim chamin. Beis Shammai says water, and that's it. Avalo tavshil. Ubeisilo omrim chamin utavshil. And Beisilo says, no, you can maintain both water as well as food. Vichi hechi de pligi belishos, pligi nami balahachzir. And the same way that they go ahead and they argue with Shehiyah, maintaining food on a fire, Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, they also argue with what? With chazara, returning food to the fire. Shebeishamai omrim notlin avalo machzirin. Beishamai says you can take stuff off, but you may not return it. Ubeisilo omrim av machzirin. And Beisilo says you can even return. So both said, the Gemara says If you understand that the Mishnah is talking about Shehiyah, the Mishnah reads perfectly. Mishnah reads mamish, like perfect. No tension, nothing. Perfect. Elei amrit lahachzir tinan. But if you want to say the Mishnah is talking about Chazara, then hachi katani. Then this is how you have to read the Mishnah. Kira shesikla bekasha begabava. If you fired up the stove with straw, with stubble, machzir alel. Then you could go ahead and return food onto it. Why? Because there's nothing left. There's no heat source left. However, Masiyah Tafshil, Begevisu Be'etim, Lo Yachzir Adjigrof Adjitin Esaifer. Similarly, however, if you fuel it up with pulp or with wood, you can't go ahead and return food onto it. It's on Shabbos now. Chazar is on Shabbos. Unless you remove the heat source or you blanket it with dirt. Umahin Machzirin, and what can you go ahead and put back on the stovetop? Beishan or Mechamin. Beishan says only water, Avalo Tavshil, but not food. Ubeisil and Beisil says Chamin Utavshil. You could put back there both Chamin and Tavshil. Beishan or Mnotlin, Avalo Machzirin. Beishan says you can't go ahead and you could take off, but you can't put back. Ubeisil Omrim Ach Machzirin. And Beisilel says that you can even put back. So the Gemara says, Hasulamali. The Gemara says it doesn't make sense. Because why? It will say, then the last two parts of the Mishnah are repetitive. Because what just happened? In the second to last part of the Mishnah, Beis Shammai says what? You could return water, but you can't return Tavshil. And what does Beis Shammai say in the last part of the Mishnah? Right? Beis Shammai says, you can go ahead and take off, but you can't return. Okay, you just told me that. Meaning, you can't return means what? You can't return food, but you can return water. Or in other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is, if you read the Mishnah as referring to Chazar, as referring to returning food to the stovetop on Shabbos, it turns out that the last two parts of the Mishnah are repetitive. That Beis Shammai is saying the same thing twice, namely, that you can only return water, but you can't return food. Therefore, the Gemara says it would appear, so now we have our choice between which way to read the Mishnah, it would appear that the reading of the Mishnah works best if you assume that it's talking about Shehiyah. So therefore, the Gemara says like this. So therefore, according to the reading, now again, the Gemara is going to, we're going to answer this up in just a little bit, but when a little bit meaning tomorrow, but just so you understand where we're holding right now, the Gemara has two potential readings of the Mishnah. The Mishnah could either go ahead and be talking about Shehiyah, in which case, again, the Mishnah is teaching us that in order to maintain food Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, the heat source must either be gone or the heat source must somehow be tempered, right? In a way that would avoid the stoking of the coals. That would ultimately be a prohibition of Malacha on Shabbos. Then we have Machlokes Beisham Beisilel as to, first of all, what you're permitted to maintain on the flame Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, and then a secondary Machlokes as to what you're permitted to return to the flame on Shabbos. If you read it that way, all works perfectly. However, if you read it that it's talking about Chazorah, the Gemara ends up by saying that essentially the last two phrases of the Mishnah according to Beis Shammai essentially become redundant. We'll continue Yeretz Hashem here tomorrow. Again, I just want to point out, we're ending off with the question. The question will be resolved in Yeretz Hashem tomorrow morning.